Shorts theme song. Nice Shorts. Yeah.
Howdy, hey, and welcome to Nice Shorts.
I'm Fu Yang.
And I'm Johnny Niddle.
And this is a show where we interview animators about the shorts they make.
Today, we are back for the second half of our interview with Cammy Kwan.
More Cammy! More Cammy! More Cammy!
So sit back, relax, and prepare for ear happiness.
And now on with the show. I like when you mentioned that you wanted to be apartment D, to be in media. It's not for just entertaining, but also what kind of message, what kind of energy you want to spread to the kid, to all the audience. Mm-hmm. And I guess that's also brings back to like about the client. I feel like apartment D can deal with the story, which is so like a top topic for nowadays. Yeah, so does the American girl, the Corinne, her background. And also, yeah, later we can mention about the anonymous video, The Life I Know.
Yeah.
Like, this all needs someone. And you are the special director to, you understand how important that subject can be dealing with.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I would love to bring back to American girl like Corinne, that one. And yes, how, because you are included in the creative decision, you can, the clients are so open to listen to what your teammates and you to think about what can bring better. So can you talk about that? How do you bring more of the culture side or anything to reach the story?
Yeah, absolutely. Working with American Girl has been a huge privilege because, like you said, they are super duper open to like our input on the creative that they supply. So there's a set story when we come to American Girl. Like every doll comes with their character novel that introduces them and like lays out the basic outline of their story. So there's a set story we need to follow, but within that, they're really open to us making changes to make these characters come across better on screen and come across more authentically or more animated or anything like that. And I'm really fortunate to have worked with American Girl for a couple years. And so we have a lot of trust. We have a lot of trust in them and they have a lot of trust in us and in me. And they will like normally listen when we have changes that we want to make. I think the biggest thing is like having an understanding. So with me and American Girl or with me and any client or with any director and any client, if your like goals are aligned, it's going to go so much smoother. And like, you can have such better communication and make such better changes if everybody trusts that they have the same goal. So like, for instance, in the very first American Girl series that we did in Meet Joss, in the very beginning, there's a scene where Joss like catches a big wave and then her brother Dylan cuts her off and like knocks her off her board. And originally the way the script was written, they really wanted Dylan to cut Joss off before she could catch the wave. But I was really, really insistent and very like passionate that we needed to see Joss be a successful surfer. One, to set up the story and make it believable, but two, because like this series is for girls, it's to empower girls, and it's so girls can have a good role model on screen. And we are not fulfilling that goal if the first good surfer we see is her older brother and we see her fail. We need to see Joss be the successful surfer, be the best surfer before we see anyone else, especially her brother. And it took a couple times having that same conversation, but eventually they totally came around and they even said like, thank you so much for standing up for the character. Like, we so appreciate that you understand her and like that you're so aligned with like the goals of American Girl. And so it's having that like overall understanding of what you are trying to do, what you as the director or the studio and what like you as a partnership with the client want to achieve from it. And if your reasoning backs up what they want, like they'll normally listen. So, you know, it, on American Girl, I give notes on everything. I give notes on every cut of every episode, and American Girl gives notes on every cut of every episode. And if ever there's a moment where like they want to do something one way, but I want to do it the other way, we have a discussion about like which way is going to convey best what it is we want from this series. Like which way will make us understand Corinne as a character, which way will make us like feel the thing we want to feel, and like why. And if I have a good reason for why I want to do something different from the way that like their notes suggest, like they'll almost always like agree if they know that I'm doing it for a reason and not just because like, oh, I like it better. Like, no, I'm doing this so that we understand that Gwyn is sad here or whatever.
Yeah, they feel you care.
Yes. Yeah. And I think like, if you, you know, it's a privilege to be partnered with, to have a client who cares about something, you know, but if you are, like, it's easy to work together if you also care and they care and we all just care about it. So let's make it the best it can be, like, you know. So it's, you're fortunate when you get to work with somebody like that. So it's pretty awesome.
Care Bears there.
Yes, exactly. With the power of friendship, we'll make this the best series yet. You know, that same thing applies, like, not just even with like a, you know, studio and client relationship, but like your director to your head of sets, your director to your like puppet department. Like if everybody on the project is aligned on like what it is you're trying to do, everything goes so much better because everybody cares and just wants to do like the best work that they can. So we're really, really lucky that everybody here tends to care very deeply about the same things.
There's a little story when I hear from you and I nod my head a lot. It is about like for this story, for Corinne's story, there's you bring in some little details about how Asian American are.
So again, for this Corinne series, because she's the first Asian American girl of the year, like American Girl had a whole cultural board who like would review everything and make sure everything was like culturally sound. And like the author of the book was Asian American. And, you know, there was a lot of really good like cultural involvement on it. But like when you come to the series, like I'm actually Chinese American, just like Corinne. Like I think she's third generation Chinese American, which is exactly the same as me. And so they were really, really open to like any input I had about like any kind of small details. And so even down to like little details, like when we went into the girl's bedroom, in the character designs, I have everybody wearing like fluffy socks or like fluffy slippers for the bedroom scenes. And one of the notes we got back was like, please have them wear their shoes. We want to show off this product. And I came back with that and I said, actually, we cannot. There is no world in which an Asian American household would have shoes on inside. And they went, wow, we had no idea. Thank you so much for your insight. No shoes. And it's as easy as that. And they're so open just to like those little things to make this character authentic and these little things to like, I felt really seen. And I think like kids who will see her will feel really seen. And like, it's kind of, it's surprising how emotional it made me just to see characters on screen that looked like me, that looked like my sister, that looked like our family. Like the first time that I saw the whole family on stage, like all four dolls, and they were all Asian American. And like, I got choked up just seeing like a whole Asian family on screen. Like, it's crazy how rare that is and how much it meant to me to like see that and how much I hope it means to like other kids and, you know, families and stuff to see themselves on screen like that. You don't often get to see that. And like something that I think is cool about American Girl is like these stories, not in a bad way, but they're very small. Like they're small, personal, intimate stories about a little girl's emotions, about the day-to-day things that happen in her day-to-day life. There's no magic going on. There's no like war that she's fighting. There's no world at stake. But the thing that's at stake in the core drama is just like how she feels about the things that happened to her. And it's so wonderful to see media that makes that important enough to be the sole focus, is just to know how these girls feel about what's happening in their lives. And that's so validating and so important, I think, to know that your experiences are important enough to be the focus of a whole series. Yeah. And I hope more kids grow up seeing that and like hearing that and truly like learn to understand that, like your experiences are important enough to be the main character.
Like for Corey's personality, I feel like she's more soft and sweet. She's not to speak up too much. And it is so lucky she has her parents and her sibling to be mm-hmm. more stand up and support her to make she grow stronger. Mm-hmm. So I wonder, yeah, for you, are you more like Corey or you're more like her sister?
That's a yes. hard question. I think I'm a lot like both of them, but in different mm-hmm. ways. And like looking at them, like I really had so much like myself and my younger sister, her name's Erin. So I had so much us in mind when I was working with these characters and thinking about these characters. And I think I'm probably more naturally like Gwyn. I'm pretty like out there, mm-hmm. but also like Corinne, I will prioritize other people's feelings over my own. And that's something I'm in therapy trying to solve that right now. But I'm a lot like Corinne in that like I'll put other people's feelings above my own. Mm. But my sister is really strong. She's quieter like Corinne, but she's really strong like Gwyn, where she is like ready to stand up to anybody if they cross that line. And she will not like let anybody prioritize like yeah. other people over her own self. And she's really good at like standing up for herself and defending herself. Mm-hmm. I think I'm like Gwyn in that, like, if I'm standing up for somebody else, there is no hesitation. Like I will fight anybody on behalf of somebody else. But if it's for myself, like I can't even like tell the waiter that they got my order wrong. I'm like, I'm so sorry. I'm allergic to this. I'm sorry. You know?
Another thing, yes, from the show, I got like, it hit me. Another point is that it showed the food and sometimes the blessing words such as full for mm-hmm. the new year. Yeah. And
yeah.
the eating thing like 粽子 and fa gao, like, I am so happy those food are no longer be translated into another form, like a rice, something, rice pudding.
Oh,
no,
yeah.
It got its name directly tell people what it is called.
Yeah, I think they didn't call it New Year's cake. They called it nyangao, which is like,
yeah.
they called it that, which is so cool. Actually, a cool thing is for the zongzi, my mm-hmm. friend, I have a friend who her whole business, she has a small business making dumplings and making bao. Mm-hmm. Her name is Brittany and she is the Bao Bei or Chef Bao Bei. But she made, I asked her like if she would make zongzi for our crew, and she made a whole batch of zongzi so everybody could try it on the crew. Wow. It was so awesome. But I don't think I had never had zongzi before, especially not fresh. But she made them fresh and steamed them and like brought them over. It was incredible. But yeah, everybody on crew learned how to say zongzi. It was great.
Now I can know, yeah, a thing like for all the kids, they are trying zongzi as well. They got satisfied for the, I can imagine your teammates, those animators, just, you know, bring their experience about eating this first time.
Yeah, here, I have one of the, these are the tiny zongzi that they make for American Girl. They're so small.
That's so cool.
You can see how tiny it is.
It's so pretty.
Yeah, but like the fact that now like a major toy line makes zongzi, like you would never ever have seen something like this before. Mm. You would, at most you would see like a G-Hop, like a takeout box or like Orange Chicken, but like zongzi wrapped in bamboo leaves and twine, like I'm so happy to live in the year 2022 right now. You know, there's a lot of bad stuff going on, but there's like so much good stuff happening too. Like, I don't know, it's quite the time to be alive.
Something interesting was listening to you two before talk about hearing the father, just the way he just made his little sounds different.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like just having the right voice actors. That's so cool.
Yeah, I love working with voice actors. It's so much fun, especially for this project. Like all of the voice actors were Asian American, and I think most of them actually spoke Mandarin and stuff like that. And so just working with them, like it was all the little things that just made this such an authentic experience. Like when we're recording the walla, which is just like, those are just like the side sounds. They're not like the lines of dialogue. It's all the like, oh, huh? Mm, 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 mm-hmm. like just every single way that you could say, hmm, like we do it and we still miss it. And I still need to do re-records later on, but working with the voice actor who was playing the dad, like it was these little things where we were doing the affirmatives. So just like, but he kept doing,
yes.
And that's just like, that's so Chinese, but you wouldn't think to direct for that if you weren't Asian American. And if you weren't working with other Asian Americans, other Asian people who'd grown up speaking like that, or like if he was saying like, yeah, or like, yes, or he'd be like, ha. And like,
yeah.
That it just like took me back. I'm like, oh, that's my dad. That's my grandpa. Like, oh my gosh. And it was just so, so cool. And like, yeah.
It's super neat. I mean, you basically worked on something that is the first experience a lot of kids will have getting to see that on a screen instead of just being at home.
Yeah. And one of the things that I really liked is like for kids who are Asian and kids who are not Asian American, I think things like American Girl help normalize that like to be Asian American is to be American. Like being Asian is just as American as anything else. And just seeing that on screen and seeing that like just it's happening. And that doesn't even have to be like a big thing. It just is like, it just sets up such a different landscape for kids to grow up in, I think. And nobody has to turn into a dragon or do kung fu. Like they can just be Asian. It's great.
Yeah. Daily life.
Yeah.
Really.
You can just live your life the same way as any other kid. And that's totally normal. Totally chill.
The big board. I like your theory on the big board.
Oh, yeah. I guess segue is like normalizing things. It's a rickety segue, but you know. Yeah. I guess on the topic of like making things the way you want them to be normal. Oh, did you have a...
No, talking about big things.
Talking about big things. we try and make sure that our culture really like reflects what it is we want to see, like both from ourselves and from the world and from our industry and everything like that. So a lot of that comes somewhat naturally, just like we tend to hire pretty diverse group of employees. I think our studio is probably like 75% female. And it just kind of happened to be that way because we work with a lot of like really talented women and then we hire them. And it wasn't necessarily something we tried to do. It's just like the way that things work because we hire the people we know and work with and think are talented. And a lot of them are women. And so that creates like a really unique culture at our studio, which I'm really proud of. And one of the things we also do at our studio, like specifically to like cultivate the kind of environment and culture that we want, is just the way that we set our studio up kind of leads to that. Like we have everybody enter through the front door, which is right next to my Max and Sean's office, so that we say hi to everybody, you know, as they come in. Sometimes I'm coming in with them, so I'm like, hey, oh yeah, no, I'm on time. Shh, no, it's fine. And you know, sometimes we're working, so we can't greet everybody, but we really specifically like want to make sure that everybody comes in through so that we could see them as they come in or as they leave at the end of the day so we can say goodbye. But one of the big things is like the central hub of our studio is our big board. And the big board is where you keep track of the projects that you're doing and you keep track of what is going to be shot on what stage on what day and by who, and just like the whole thing is laid out there, and that's how we control the whole show basically. And so we felt really, really strongly, even when we were working out of our living room, when our office was our living room and our garage was our studio, we decided, like, we vowed to each other that our big board is going to be in a space that's accessible to the whole crew. And we are going to put our break room next to the big board so that the whole crew feels ownership over whatever's happening at the studio, and that there is visibility about what we're doing and why we're doing it and when we're doing it. Anybody can look at the big board and see for themselves what's happening where. And everybody can see production working to figure stuff out. So there's no opacity to the decisions we're making. There's full transparency. They can watch us make the decisions and they can ask us why we're doing things, and we will always tell them. And so we set the big board up in the same room as our lunch tables and as our lockers and our fridge and our coffee maker, so that everybody has that shared, I don't know, connection with how the studios run, because, you know,
I love it.
We owe it just as much to the, like, you know, it's their studio just as much as it is ours. Like, every single person is contributing to the way that things are happening, and every single person should be able to understand, if they want to, why we make the decisions that we do.
Speaking of the decisions that you do make, the ethical matrix.
Oh, yeah. So we have something called an ethical matrix, and I don't remember who talks about that. That might be in like the 4-hour work week or the E-Myth or something, but an ethical matrix is basically like a series of bullet points that guide the decisions that you make. So for us, that tends to look like, that tends to guide like the jobs that we'll take on. So my ethical matrix, personally, one, does it make the world better? Two, does it help kids? Three, does it improve the stop motion industry or elevate the quality of life for our artists? And four, does it push the boundaries of stop motion? So all of those are somewhat interpretive. Like, I can fit a lot of things to, does it make the world better? For any decision that we make, like, I normally want it to fulfill like at least two or three of those, if not all four of those. So to me, what that looks like is like, for does it make the world better or does it help kids? Like, does this have educational value? Like, is this going to improve the world by people knowing about it? So if something like American Girl, yeah, I think it improves the world. And I think it does help kids because it like, yeah, it checks both of those things. Does it improve the stop motion industry or elevate the quality of life for our artists? I don't know if this project necessarily does that, but it gives us the opportunity to do that as a studio. So because it's us who's running it, and because of the way that we're going to run it, like, yes, it does improve the industry because it provides, you know, multiple months of consistent work at like pretty fair pay at a very reasonable speed with, you know, your nights are intact, your weekends are intact, and you're going to be at a place where you're treated like super nicely and people care about you. And we're going to have a meme chamber and play games at lunch, and we're going to watch Cats at Christmas time. So the cats part might not improve the lives of the artists, but the rest of it, yes. And then four, does it push the boundaries of stop motion? American Girl, like, kind of. Yeah, but there are other projects where it's like, is this going to show people? Well, I guess American Girl does, actually, because it kind of proves, like, even with these, like, relatively stiff characters, you can get action, you can get emotion, you can do anything with nothing, you know? And it's another instance, like, for something like the Joss series, where we used a shower curtain to make this, like, somewhat convincing surf wave. Like, stop motion, the just, like, low craft, you can tell it's a shower curtain stop motion, can be so beautiful and can feel so fun to watch. So it does kind of push those boundaries. So those are the ones that I look for. Max and Sean each have their own like flavor of ethical matrix. And then we have a lot of the things that like overlap for us. I think most of us, like three of our ethical matrices overlap at any given point. Anytime one of us reads something, we always tell each other about it, which is why our offices have to be connected. Like, God forbid we're in different rooms for too long. But anytime I learn something new, I tell them both about it. Anytime they learn something new, they'll tell everybody else about it. And so I think Max brought up ethical matrices when we were a pretty young company. And he was like, I think everybody needs to make their ethical matrix and we need to compare them to decide whether we're taking this job or not. And so I think we originally just made them to help us decide whether to take certain jobs or not. So sometimes, like, even if the job maybe doesn't make the world better or help kids, like if it has nothing to do with that, but if it pays really, really, really well, and it means we can give everybody a pay bump and everybody can get like a Christmas bonus and we can make sure everybody has work for the next 2 years, like that might be a reason to do it. It is kind of situational. It's not just like you can check the boxes and have a decision, but it helps you guide those decisions. And it doesn't have to just apply to stop motion. Like, I think everybody should have an ethical matrix for everything. And I think it would make the decision-making so much easier for people.
Yeah, I'm going to list out later. Yeah. This is so nice. Yeah, so I don't feel like I'm soulless when doing any artwork. You know? Yeah, yeah, you're pushing forward some going, which fits, yeah.
And it also helps kind of with what we talked about earlier of like feeling sad if you're moving away from like being the one who makes it to being the one who's like delegating it being made. If you have in mind your ethical matrix and you know you're fulfilling that, then like you can keep pushing because you understand why you're doing it. And when you're on your third sleepless night, you're like, why did I take this job? You'll remember like, oh yeah, okay, it's for a reason.
Yeah, keep in mind. And I like what another thing is that I heard you say Apartment D is willing to cultivate or to like a training if it's possible to welcome more junior animator and things and make it run longer, try to make a show that's more sustainable. Like, yeah, this is also the goal. Can you say more about it?
Yeah, of course. I think the other day we were talking about like what it will mean to hike. Have made it. Like, how will I know that we've made it? And part of me is like, I don't think I'll ever feel like we've made it because I am pretty, like, we're very ambitious and like everything we get, we're like, we can do better. Like, we can do it again and be better. We can do more. But one of the things that to me will be really satisfying and will kind of feel like we've made it is to get consistent enough work that we can keep people employed for long term and provide things like healthcare and, you know, like 401ks, is that a thing? I don't know, you know, like retirement, healthcare, please. Those kinds of like nice stuff that people want and need. And also like to have the stability and like to have a long term enough project that like we can hire more junior people and like know that we have the time to train them without, because sometimes, you know, when you're taking jobs that are at a breakneck pace, it's really hard to take on younger, newer animators because you're like, I see that you have the potential, but like this needs to be done in 2 weeks. And like, we don't have enough time for you to get up to speed to be able to do this. So I'm so sorry, but we can't bring you on right now. But if we have a job where it's like, we have 2 years to do this, like we can definitely train you, like spend the first 2 months learning, you know, or like we have time for you to redo a shot if you haven't learned the style yet. On this job, actually on Corinne, we were able to redo a couple shots so that some of our animation assistants could become full animators and they could like learn the style a little bit more. But that to me will really be like a we've made it, is when we can provide that stability and provide that quality of life and like provide that learning atmosphere for people. I think we always wanted Apartment D to feel like an academy or like a conservatory, or like a place where everyone is trying to improve and further their personal craft and further the craft of stop motion in general. And that's like a lofty goal, but you gotta aim high and get close. Or you shoot for the moon and you land amongst the stars, you know, that phrase. But yeah, we really want to create a space where people can strive for excellence. And always be improving. I think the worst thing is to become complacent and to stop striving, because then we start like freaking out.
This is going to sound super kiss-assy. You always give really good feedback that's actionable and useful. And I'm curious that how did you practice? Is it something you like focused on, or how did that come to you?
Gosh, I don't know if I have like a coherent answer for that. I guess maybe it's seeing leadership kind of as like a position of service for your artists. Like, it's not for me to look at something and be like, that's not good, do better. Like, it is for me as a leader to like provide people the guidance to make the best thing that they can. And it's not helpful if I just tell somebody, I don't like this. Like, that's not going to help them do their best work. I need to, like, I owe it to them to tell them what I think could be improved and like what I think they need to do to make it a cohesive vision. I think also I'm very lucky, and I've always worked with people who are really good about giving feedback and stuff like that. As a young animator, Like, I would ask people for their critique and feedback all the time, and you receive it from the best animators in the world. Will like come over to my rinky-dink little test stage and look at my like 12 walk cycles and tell me to the frame what I need to do different next time. And I learned a lot from that. I learned a lot from watching the first director I ever worked for or with is Drew Hodges, who is the director of Tumbleleaf. I think a lot of my directing style comes a lot from him, and I never even worked with him that much on stage, but the few times that I did like were so impactful, and he's so thoughtful with everything, and he has such a clear vision with everything that he wants. And so I just tried to direct like Drew, or direct like Max would direct me when we first started working together, and they're both so thoughtful and so like meticulous with what they want. So it's like a combination of that. Like, I've had really good role models, and also like, I want to empower everybody to do their best. And I know what's helpful, and I know what's certainly not helpful. I've received enough notes myself to know what's not helpful. So I try and be as helpful as I can, and respectful of people's time. Like, I can't just throw notes back that are not going to guide you in a direction. Like, it's wasting everybody's time. I don't know. A lot of it is like, because I've learned from such good people. Like, Sean is the best animator that I know in the entire world. And like, I've watched him direct, like give people feedback enough as an animation supervisor that like, I can give people enough feedback on their stuff. I'm like, what would Sean say? I think he'd say it like this. But it's also like recognizing your limitations, you know, like when I'm working with an animator, and if I'm like, this isn't quite working, and I think it's because of this, but I'm going to call Sean in and have him talk to you, because I think that he can help you more than I can. And it's having that like a little bit of humility to be like, no, when you're out of your depth. And sometimes it'll be easier for me to send you a YouTube link to the thing that I like, instead of me trying to use my words to describe, like, there's an instrument that goes doot, 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 doot. Do you know that? No? Okay. Here's what I'm thinking. It's like this.
It was super useful. I remember the first email I think you sent, like, I don't even know how much time you put into it, but it must have been a lot, because it was links and links. And then like, okay, at this time to this time, here to here. And it is so specific. And that is just beyond useful.
Thank you. I think the first thing I do whenever I get a project is I start compiling those references to music, to camera moves, to characters I like all of that. The first thing I do when I'm reading a script is I read it, and anything that it makes me think of, I start compiling it. And I don't know who those notes are going to yet, but I'm going to start collecting them. So I probably had those notes written like months before we ever spoke.
So you talked right now about the shots and the camera moves. Nothing's tracking shots, right? It's no movements. It's all still camera stuff.
Sometimes we actually do quite a few camera, well, not quite a few. We do enough camera moves, and we do our camera moves in a couple different ways. So for simple camera moves where it's just kind of like trucking along with the character on a single axis, we use what's called an 80-20, which is just like a bar with grooves that you can put a little sled on, and you just attach the camera to the sled, and the animator like pushes it along and just animates the camera along with the character. So there are a couple different ways to achieve like a smooth tracking shot with an 80-20. Like, you can either track something on screen and make like the increment marks on screen, or you can put a piece of tape down on the 80-20 track and make your increment marks. Like, you measure it and you math it, and you know that this, it should move to this point at this time picture, or you do a combination thereof. So we'll do 80-20 track for camera shots, which is hand animated. Sometimes camera pans, where you're just like twisting the camera from one point of axis and it's kind of like rotating along one axis. We'll do that by hand too. But sometimes there are more complex shots. So there's one shot in like the very beginning of episode one, where the camera's like really low down to the ground, and it's looking at Corinne as she comes towards the camera, and then she like jumps over the camera. So the camera like follows her with a focus as it comes close, and then it goes like sideways, but also up and down as it follows her jump, and then it like watches her as she goes away.
Wow.
Yeah. That was one of the ones, that was a shot that was in my head from the very first time I read the script. I like read the script and I thought about Spirit, Stallion of the Cimarron. And there's like a shot from Spirit that is that shot. And I called Warren in and I was like, Warren, we're not shooting this for 3 months, but look at this shot. Can we do this? And he's like, sure, yeah, like we could talk about it in 3 months, but I think we could do that. And I was like, done. And that was one of the first shots of the movie that I knew we were going to do, or the show. But for that kind of camera move that's complex, that's moving on multiple axes or whatever, and having like a focus pull and everything, we use motion control cameras for that. We have a motion control head that we can program, and Warren's gotten really adept with that. So there are a lot of actually camera move options. This is the first American Girl where I haven't had like a Hitchcock zoom happen. I normally like that go down. I tend to really, really like either like a Hitchcock zoom or like having the character like be there and then like yell and then the camera like zooms back to show everybody staring at them. I did it in Joss. I think we did it in Courtney. We did it in, I don't think we did it in Kira. Maybe we did it.
Did you but not do
we didn't
it?
Do it in Corin.
When she screams in the forest? No, those are cuts. Those are cuts, aren't they?
Yeah, Lost was cuts because it's echoes. So you visually have to be like, echo, echo,
oh,
echo,
wow.
echo. but I tend to overuse that. And Max very kindly was like, I think I tend to find those maybe a little bit on the nose. And I was like, oh, you're right. Maybe I should try to be more subtle on this one.
You mentioned, so American Girl dolls are kind of heavy, right? Not heavy, but they're not light.
They're not light. I mean, just by way of being 18 inches tall, there's like 18 inches of material. So they could be as light as we could even possibly try and make them, but they have a weight just because they're so big.
So what's the ski jump shots?
Yeah.
What's the rig like for that?
It kind of depends on the shot. It doesn't actually have to be that crazy. I think for, a lot of the ski jumps were by an animator named Willie Fair. And Willie was on with us. He's been with us since like the beginning. He was on Joss and he's a really avid surfer. So he did a lot of the surf shots there. And he's also an avid skier who grew up in Colorado skiing from the day he could walk. And so Willie had a lot of skiing knowledge that like I didn't have. And so like, thank God he was on this series. but a lot of those shots weren't as crazy as one might think. We did a lot of rigging from overhead for those. So we'd take the 80-20 track, the one that we can push the camera along. You can also push puppets along it. So we would hang the 80-20 track from above and have rigging come down from the track and go into the puppet. So it only has like one point of contact with the puppet. All you have is like one pole coming up out of their head and going way off screen. And so there's a little bit of work to be done there. Like we have to make sure the shadow's not going on anything. We have to make sure we can get a clean plate. Yeah, but it didn't actually end up being like too crazy, honestly.
You had the older skier, the Olympic one, do a flip though.
Yeah. It was the same rig as we would use for anything else. Willie's just really good. I mean, part of what makes a really good stop motion animator and something that our animators like, they're really well trained in it and they're really conscientious because they have like a lot of respect for the post-production team. And they have a lot of respect for like the people that are going to have to clean up after them. But they're really good about hiding their rigs behind their puppets and like being really conscientious about like where their rigging is going, what it's covering. And they know to come and ask for a second exposure if they need to like have something crazy. Everybody's just really conscientious and very professional about it. I think the specific shots you're talking about, though, those were shot on the front light, back light stage. So we didn't even have any sets in there. We were just, it was just like the puppet. She maybe moved like 2 feet across, but a lot of it was just her like in place animating around. And the post team was just amazing at compositing. And they made it look like she was flying through the air.
I don't remember Joss, but the others have other elements. So you do mixed media now and then. Like, so on Corinne, you had the 2D, your friend.
Jonathan Peartree.
Yeah, so good.
He's so talented. Yeah, he did all the 2D for this one, which was so cute. Oh my gosh, I was so happy with it.
On Kira, it's funny because earlier you said you did like the 8-bit stuff and whatnot because you had the 80s throwback.
Yeah, the 80s doll. Courtney.
In-house?
It was freelance workers working remotely, but they were working with us for it. So I directed those. I made the character designs for those pixel characters. And then we had the pixel artists just interpret those designs into 32/64 bit, and they made it so good. So we got to work with a really fantastic group for that. And we've worked with them on some other things since, not for American Girl, but for other stuff.
Is that something as the director you just like to bring in, is like just for a different feel for a bit?
A lot of those ideas actually come from American Girl. Okay. They come in like asking for a variety of different styles and stuff, which is a really cool opportunity to get to do that stuff. I think, oftentimes people are not 100% confident that kids will watch stop motion just because people are not used to seeing stop motion. So they like to brighten it up with more familiar styles, like 2D styles and stuff like that. And, you know, that's understandable. An hour of stop motion content nonstop, like, you know, they can't, their faces don't move. So like, sure, let's throw something new in there for sure. And I don't mind. I love trying these new mediums and they make me more comfortable with it. Like, I feel very confident with pixel art now because I've worked with so many fantastic pixel artists that I'm like, yeah, I know these people. I know they can do anything we need to do. Like, if anybody has a pixel art commission, you let us know. We'll make a whole animation for you. These people are great.
Yeah, I love Johnny mentioned about the 2D because I do enjoy. Is that for the 2D the artists work on when it was a board, or is more like you already have a footage to match it together?
They start just based on the boards, and then probably they do like three different revisions on any 2D animation. So probably by their third revision, we have the background ready for them and we can give them the background so they understand like what it is they're animating on top of. But generally they don't need the background because at least for this project, the 2D was just kind of like its own thing on top of whatever was happening. There was one section of the 2D for this one where they see the zongzi being made, where they we animate the zongzi being made. Yeah. That we did need the animation a little bit earlier because it was kind of animating around their faces at certain points. So that one, I think we tried to get JP the footage like by the second round of revisions. But generally things are boarded pretty precisely. So, well, not as precise as 2D. Boarding in stop motion is way loosey-goosey compared to like anything else. Because in 2D and CG, like you're using the boards directly to animate off of. Basically, they're like keyframes, essentially. Yeah. But for stop motion, it's like these boards are a suggestion. They'll help us get our angles and like they'll tell us the basic things that need to happen. But like really the acting happens on stage. And that's something that's really unique to stop motion. And it's a lot more similar to like really acting, and even more so than really acting, it's actually a lot more similar to like musical performance, because you kind of get like one shot at it. You don't get to do like unlimited takes because it takes a lot of time. So the boards are pretty loose. They're a suggestion. A lot of stuff happens on stage when the animators and I talk about it. And even sometimes I'll come on stage when an animator's done and they've done something I hadn't told them to do. And like 9 times out of 10, that's fantastic. I love it. And 1 time out of 10, I'm like, I love it, but.
The boards, whoever did them, or so like when Gwen gets the puppy attack, the face, just there's so many gray shots in there. There's
like, oh my gosh. Yeah. The board artists, we always luck out. I mean, I feel like a broken record, but just like, we're so lucky to work with the people that we work with. Like, our industry is so full of like such kind, caring, passionate, talented people. Like, I cannot believe everybody I meet is wonderful and I can't say enough about them. You know, check out our Apartment D Instagram. There's a little square that says thank you. And there's a full list of everybody that worked on this project. Go follow all of them because they're all fantastic.
A question is, I feel like, is it possible for Apartment D to find the, you know, to find in to collaborate? It seems like people who apply for it is a plus for you if they get to know different roles in the whole film production because they can understand each part. Like, yeah, you'll consider more, like they can be more general, but they know the whole process.
Yeah, yeah. Having people who are generalists is really helpful when you're a small studio because you can take one person and you can keep them on longer. They can do multiple jobs, and that's always really great. I also personally think that everybody should have at least a basic understanding of every other aspect of production so that you operate with like, with a good deal of respect towards what those people are doing. I think every animator should understand how their puppets are made so they don't just like wrench on a puppet's arm and be mad when it breaks. They understand like this arm represents three afternoons of their work. Like I will honor what they've done. And like, I am going to make sure that my rigging is hidden and as clean as possible because I understand that somebody has to paint this out after I'm finished. And I think it just makes everybody a stronger artist and it makes somebody a better teammate when they understand those different roles. Mm. I think one of the things I feel the most fortunate about in my whole like career is working at Bix Pix on Tumbleleaf. I was an animation assistant and that meant that like, while I was animating on stage and while I was being taught to animate, a good portion of my time, I was working in the puppet department and I was working in the rigging department and the armature department, helping them make rigging, helping them make armatures and helping them make puppets. And I really appreciate that because one, I got a lot of life skills that I can now do. Like I can make armatures. I went back and worked at Bix Pix as an armaturist for a project after that. But it also makes me like so much more appreciative of how hard everybody has to work to make the things that I get to use as an animator happen.
Yeah.
And it also means that I can fix a puppet on my own or I can rig something on my own and I don't need to like stop production to be able to get somebody to help me. Like I can just do it. I can just take care of it. So I think that's really valuable when people are able to be more independent and to be more appreciative of other people.
Yeah. Is it okay if we can we start to listen to the story of the life I know? Is that this music video project also fulfill as an artist? Because you know you tackle so many different roles, storyboard, design, making everything almost.
Yeah, that one was really, really fun. So The Life I Know was a music video we made for a Filipino band called The Itchy Worms. And The Itchy Worms are good friends with our friend Marie Jamora. And Marie is a Filipino director and she directs live action and she's been directing like a bunch of different episodes of a bunch of different shows lately. Like she is kind of like a world traveler at this point. And she and her husband, Jason, we've worked with both of them. Jason's like a DP and also a producer. And they made a show called Family Style for Stage 13 with WB. And that is an unscripted food and travel series about the role of food in Asian culture.
Oh, cool. Okay.
And that was so fun. And they came to us to make stop motion segments for Family Style. And that was one of the first times that I actually was able to practice and find out that I really loved like doing the like conceptual development of these like more culturally inspired pieces. So like what that really ended up looking like was like that we had a segment that was about the man who invented the pink donut box, the Donut King. And he came from Cambodia and he fled war in Cambodia and came and lived in the US and started a donut shop and made like pink donut boxes and became super successful. And so to tell that story, we originally were like, oh, we really like origami. So like maybe an origami piece. But then when I was looking into that story and looking into the art of Cambodia and stuff like that, I came upon Cambodian shadow puppets. And I was like, we don't need to do origami. Like we're going to do Cambodian shadow puppet styles. Ooh. And here's the style of animation. And it's based off of this art that is it like totally integral to like who this person was and like making those connections and like finding out like just finding those connections between like this is a way that no other story could be told. Like this, only this story can be told with Cambodian shadow puppets. Like only this story could be told with actually animating like rice or like, you know, a different, you know, finding those connections.
Yes.
I love that. That is what I'm most passionate about. But anyway, so I worked with them on Family Style. We got to do a bunch of animated segments, and then they came to us for the Life I Know music video. And that was a really cool opportunity because it was a completely blank slate. Because Marie was the director of the project, and because she's good friends with the Itchy Worms, they just said, like, make whatever you want. Like, any song you want, any story you want, whatever you want. And so Marie had the basic concept of she wanted to do something having to do with birth and having to do with like leaving the safety of like the womb. Mm-hmm. And that was like the basic concept that she came to us with. And she came and we completely collaborated from the very beginning about what the story was going to be and how we were going to tell it. And it's half paper cutout and half dimensional felt puppets. The like cultural context of that is, okay, it's multi-layered. So if I'm going too long, cut me off.
Please go.
So we kind of came to this concept of like the womb being like this safe space where like all of your dreams come true. And it's kind of like a dream world versus like the kind of cold, hard real world. And the womb, since it's like, it is related to your childhood. And when you're a baby, when you're a child, you're always like face to face with fabrics. You're laying your face on your parents. You have like a stuffed animal and it's made of felt or whatever.
Yeah.
And so I felt very strongly that like the dream world or the womb world has to be like really textural and really fabric-y. And so I did a lot of research into that. And then, you know, this is like a very Filipino story. It's a Filipino band by a Filipino director, like for a Filipino audience. So like, what's a distinctly Filipino story we can tell? And so I did a lot of research into traditional craft in the Philippines. And there is a type of weaving, and the people that make it are called dream weavers, because the patterns that they weave, they can only weave the patterns that they have seen in their dreams. And so I was like, it has to be this dream woven fabric, like, because we're in the dream world where like you see what could be possible. It's the womb. We're using the dream weavers, like it's made of fabric. Let's go. It was just so cool to be able to like make those connections. And like at the end of the story, the girl grows wings. And at first we were like, feather wings. Yeah. But then Jason was like, I feel like feather wings are too like Christian, because it's too like Christian angel. So like, what about butterfly wings? And I was like, there's this butterfly that only lives in the Philippines. It's going to be these kind of butterflies.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. So we had just complete and total freedom to do anything we wanted with it. And it was so cool to be able to tell a story that was just like so distinctly Filipino. Like, you wouldn't use that fabric for any other story. Like, you wouldn't use that fabric for any other character. It was really, really cool.
Cheers to stop motion.
Like, yeah.
Really, you suddenly made me think of like other, so there's other great shorts like Lost and Found or something they use.
Oh yeah, with the little crochet dinosaur, right?
Yes, you're the director, and you are helping with the director, and find the right material for your story. Yeah. I love that. Yeah,
it was cool actually being in a role instead of being the director. I was helping the director, so I just got to think 100% about like the creative way to like make her vision come across. That was cool.
You have a good memory too.
Yes, better now than it used to be. I have a pretty good memory, but specifically I have a good memory for things that I think are interesting. And I've always loved like cultures and anthropology and like mythology. I wanted to be an archaeologist before I wanted to be an animator. So stuff like that just like sticks with me. And I see a lot of connections between like the culture of this place with like this, I don't know. Yeah, I see a lot of those connections.
Do you have like books of notes of all these things that you like, things you pick up along the way? Like, well, that would be great for someday down the road.
Yeah. All my notebooks, I have kept every single notebook I've ever filled. I've kept every drawing pad I've ever filled, probably from like my early elementary days. It's all in a drawer, much to my mother's chagrin, back in my home, in my room where I grew up. There's like a whole like file cabinet just filled with like pounds and pounds of notebooks. And she's like, can I throw these out? I'm like, no. She's like, can you put them somewhere? I'm like, it's too heavy. So it's all there. And it's good to have all that outside of me noggin. So sometimes I can't keep it all up in here anymore. I keep filling it with new stuff.
The weightlifting archaeologist who does stop motion. It's so cool.
Yeah. I'm nothing if not a Renaissance person. Got a lot of skills. I don't know if I've ever honed any of them to be the best at any of them, but I'm like fair at most of them.
Is it about weightlifting? Can I hear more about it? It's very good for stop motion, sounds like.
It can be. I was a really avid weightlifter when I was in high school. I was super competitive. I won a national championship in 2009, maybe. When I was in high school. I won a national championship of Olympic weightlifting. And I have been coaching CrossFit since I was probably 14 years old. I don't do it. Once I moved to LA, I stopped because I actually had like a job. But through high school, through college, like I was a CrossFit coach for kids and adults. Mm-hmm. I was like pretty competitive weightlifter, a competitive swimmer, somewhat competitive CrossFitter. I think that every animator, especially stop motion animators, mm-hmm. should be aware of their body's physicality, because to animate something in stop motion, at least for me, I have to do it with my body. I have mm-hmm. to be able to replicate those movements. And that's how I figure out how to do stuff. So oftentimes, like if I'm animating, you'll come on my stage and I'm like on the ground getting up and getting down and getting up, getting down, getting up, and then spinning around. And you're like, are you okay? Are you having a stroke? I'm like, no, it's research.
How about the original content, Apartment D?
We have had the great good fortune to be very, very commercially busy for the last couple of years, which hasn't left a lot of room for personal or original projects. Hmm. When the pandemic hit, that was the first time that we had any time to think about like our own personal projects. We started making a short that has been in Max and Sean's brain since college. So it's probably like a decade and a half old at this point. Wow. But it is called The Blue Mist, and it is kind of a love letter to 90s superhero cartoons. And the trailer for it is up on our YouTube, and it's almost so done.
Good.
It is
so good.
Thank you. Almost done. We filmed it partially in our garage. We filmed it partially at Starburns when we were renting that space. We filmed it partially back in the garage, and now it's done. We're just finishing the music on it, and we're actually so fortunate to work with Ron Wasserman, who composed the original Power Rangers theme song for their US version of Power Rangers. And Ron has like been one of Sean's like idols for his entire life. And when Sean was just graduating college, he sent Ron an email and asked him if he would score his animation reel. And Ron Wasserman actually got back to him and was like, yeah, what are you thinking? And Sean was so starstruck that he never responded. And then 7 years later, he replied on that same email thread and said, hey, Ron, sorry for the delay. I've been busy. But we have a short film now. I started a company. That company is doing great. We made a short film. Will you score this short film? And Ron got back to him and said, tell me a little bit about yourself. And so he asked Max and Sean like all these very, very like insightful and thoughtful and deep questions, like what is your goal as an artist, like what is the plan for your company for the next 5 years, like what do you want to do as an artist, and just like things like that, to just keep like deeply vibe checked them. But they passed, and his now we're working matrix. Together his ethical matrix, yeah. But Ron found us worthy, and now he's scoring. I think we're on like the second round of revisions, and it's almost done.
That's so cool.
Yeah, so we're working on that. It's maybe like 3 minutes or so, really just like a proof of concept of a series we might want to make. Mm-hmm. We're working on another pilot right now for an original series. We're testing some new animation methods. It's still stop motion, but just a little more stylized than we've ever done before. And that's good. I'm working on development right now. So I'm working with a few people who have a project that they'd like to take from the script that they have to be an animated version. So that has been something new and cool for me to kind of delve into how to like really truly develop something from the ground up. And also just kind of finally having the time to brainstorm what other original stuff we might want to do. So that's very exciting. And we also want to do a lot more tutorials, like on YouTube and stuff like that, because we care a lot about sharing our knowledge that we've gathered over the years.
Please, you already share some tutorials. I enjoy a lot, like armature and things.
Yeah.
I wonder, is it ever possible that it might be like Mighty Oak, they do workshop as well? Is that Apartment D someday will have that too?
Actually, like just today, I've been talking to some people from the Burbank United School District about maybe teaching some classes at some of the elementary schools. So maybe we'll someday make some workshops for like anybody.
Nice. Yeah.
But yeah, I think that's something we would love to do. Like all three of us are natural teachers. I actually used to work with kids specifically. Like I worked at a summer camp for like 4 or 5 years working with kids. So that is something we would love to do, working, teaching people.
Yeah, please, I know kids are very important and lovely, but please don't give up on us. Please teach us too. As an adult, I want them to.
Yeah, no, of course.
Are you guys looking to basically be the whole studio and then just find a network to air? Or do you have are you thinking about just putting them out yourselves? Or
that strategy is kind of twofold. I think, you know, it would be fantastic if we could pitch it to a network and have them pick us up and like, and air it on their network. Like I would love to be with Cartoon Network or Nickelodeon or Netflix or anybody really, like to get that platform to share our work. But, you know, short of that, we're also fine just releasing stuff on our YouTube. I think the most important thing for us is like, we want to find our audience and we want to connect with the people that our work speaks to. And if the best way to do that is by releasing shorts on YouTube that people can actually enjoy, and then maybe a network will notice that people enjoy it, and then they'll pay us to make it more, that would be fantastic. If we have a pitch packet and we pitch it around and people just pick it up and put it on their network outright, like that would also be fantastic. There's just so many ways to go about it. But I think one of the things that like, it's so hard to overcome is like waiting for the perfect project to be the perfect way and like wait till it's all perfect. And I think that's held us back. And I think it holds a lot of artists back. And like the biggest thing that has helped us get where we are is like, just make it. Like, don't worry, don't wait for it to be perfect. Like just make work. And even if it like kind of sucks, there's gonna be something in there that is worthwhile. And like that will make its way into your next one, which will make its way into your next one. And so I think right now we wanna use any opportunity we can to like just make the work and just put it out there and hope that it connects with people. And that's the most important thing for us right now, I think. It's intimidating though. It's so vulnerable to put something out there and be like, this was it. We didn't have to answer to anybody. This is exactly how it is.
This is our fault.
Yeah, I know it is. Well, and like trying to, you know, if you're making it for yourself, you got to like keep it within a certain scope. Like you can't just not work forever. You know, we have to like do commercial work too. So trying to keep things within a scope where like, one, we're not giving too much to our personal project to the detriment of our like professional work, but also like we got to make it fast enough that we don't get bored of it. So we just got to make it and make it fast and make it, just get it out there.
Well, like with Blue Mist, you had to strike it and build it back up at least 3 times then.
Yeah, that was, that made it take much longer, I think, than we had anticipated. And it also kind of, it's hard to like start and stop on something. But you know, it came out okay.
Okay.
Thank you. It gave us something to do during the pandemic, which was good.
It totally captures that like Darkwing Duck opening, kind of flying around the cities with like the big window kind of feel.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I think that's what we're going for. Kind of that like, you know, Batman the Animated Series homage. Just like everything that we love is Saturday morning cartoons. Like if we could convey like what we make in one phrase, it would be Saturday morning cartoon, which I don't know if kids today like understand that phrase because cartoons are on demand at all times, but the vibe of a Saturday morning cartoon is what we want everybody to take away from everything that we make.
Can you mention anything about the pilot at all or no? Yeah, yet.
Probably not yet.
Okay.
If you know the things that we make, like I'm sure you have like the vibe of what it's going to be. It's going to be very action oriented. It's going to be very like kid friendly, and it's going to be kind of like melodramatic and goofy. So like anything that we've made at this point, probably.
Quick, in your ethical matrix, you talked about kids and you taught kids, and even when you were a kid and still you want to teach kids and you love kids. And I agree, kids are great. But is that Department D, is that a goal, is to always stay in that younger demographic?
Not necessarily. I think it just, what we like to make happens to vibe with what kids like to see. But I think I would say we make stuff for the child in all of us. So yeah, we're not focused entirely on children, but it's just like kids kind of get the vibe that we like to give off. Like, we're not trying to make anything so super dark, not trying to make something like so super artsy or like super duper racy. Like, raunchy humor just doesn't really, it's not really what we make. Like, we're really, really earnest in, in the things that we make. And earnest things are sometimes hard to pitch to adults.
There's the logo. So,
yeah. Oh yeah, there's Sean. We just got our t-shirt. Oh, no, our sweatshirts, Apartment D sweatshirts.
Nice. Yeah.
Sean's giving it a good model.
Sean's like, he's like, oh, as, I stay out of, as I stay out of the office long enough, I gotta get work done.
Yeah. I maybe might angle you away in case he's doing some NDA stuff over there. We can come over here now.
But thank you for the poses. That was great. Yeah.
Oh yeah. He's an animator. He knows his poses. But yeah, so we don't necessarily have to make work for kids, but kids just kind of are the natural audience for the way that we like to tell stories and the kind of stories we like to tell.
That's cool. I like the way you phrase it. I mean, you're basically, you're making stuff for kids without talking down or having it be like, oh, this is for kids. You're making things that are just accessible to kids.
Yeah. And I think that is so important to me, is like, I don't think kids are any less, less capable than adults. I think they can understand like incredibly complex things. Like, they can understand the darkness in life. They can understand like the good parts of life. They can understand it all. I mean, I think Hayao Miyazaki is one of the best storytellers for children. And like, he understands everything that kids experience and like can actually encapsulate in their like short life experience. They've experienced it all. They just don't know how to put the words to it, or they've never seen it contextualized in anybody else's experience, but they've experienced it. So I never, ever, ever want to make something that talks down to them. I want to make stuff that just contextualizes it and like can kind of help them learn how to work with what it is they already know.
We can bring in previous guests.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Well, here's the thing. This is a fun question, but I'm going to test you on it immediately, depending on how you answer it.
Okay. I'm ready.
Ready.
So the question is just, it's simple. Can you spell banana backwards? Oh, you're practicing. Okay, go ahead.
A-N-A-N-A-B.
Yeah.
Is that right?
That's it.
Yes. It's because of the rhythm. Everything's rhythms.
Oh, yeah, yeah, the rhythm method is working. Yeah. We asked the right guest.
Anything you want to promote?
Blue Must has been out, so if you haven't seen it, go check it out. I don't get, just if you're interested in Apartment D or somehow in me, like, just follow along on my Instagram. I tend to like promote anything that's happening at least once there. Apartment D's Instagram is probably where you'll get the most like up-to-date stuff about what we're doing. Animation Wildcard. If anybody doesn't know what that is, please like check out that community. They're so fantastic. Lex and Casey, who founded it, we helped them get it up and running, but they are really the ones who have like made it happen. So they're fantastic, and they have so many resources for anybody at any level of any interest in stop motion. So
the Hello Stop Mo series is great.
Oh my gosh, Hello Stop Mo series is so fantastic. We might be on, if anybody follows the Game Grumps, we might be doing more partnerships with them. I'm not sure though. So,
Can I backtrack real quick before we end?
Yeah, please.
Yeah.
You guys did the characters on screen.
Oh, the Chinese characters?
Yeah. What was that like, getting those onto screen?
It wasn't too tremendously difficult, honestly. I was making sure it was simplified Chinese, and I actually physically drew all of the characters. My handwriting is like so-so, but I practiced very hard and I drew each of them. We wanted to use simplified Mandarin. We chose Mandarin because that's what Corinne and her family speaks. Mm-hmm. And I just had to look it up from like three different sources to make absolutely sure I was doing it like as correct as possible. And an American girl was like very, very conscientious about that too, about making sure like every single piece of Chinese that we said or wrote or ever showed up on screen, we had to submit to the cultural board to make sure it was all okay. And so they were really, really vigilant about making sure everything was as accurate as possible. I was also being very vigilant too. So between the two of us, we really made sure it was okay.
Yeah. Every time you write one, you're like, my cat is pretty. Next one.
Cat is pretty.
That would be, I think if Apartment D does a different, like another shirt soon, that should be the slogan at the bottom.
They're pretty, yeah.
Yep. That's all they got to know about us. We've got good animals. I wish that we had like a post department so we could have like a studio cat or something. But we did have a bring your dog to work day, and that was pretty great. That was a largely requested day. And every Friday we would have a dress up day. So one of those days was bring your dog to work day. Yeah, every Friday is a different theme. We all vote on which theme we want to do that day. So we had Pirate Day, and we had like Wild West. We probably had Pajama Day. I can't even remember all of them. Our final one was Fancy Cats Day, because we, at our Christmas party every year, we watch Cats 2019, because that's a tradition now. We love that movie. If you're around Apartment D for long enough, you will hear us talk about Cats, and then you will hear us quote Old Greg from The Mighty Boosh.
Oh.
And those are guaranteed to happen. So just start your clocks the second you enter the studio.
I mean, thank you so much for taking the time with us today.
Yeah. You're so welcome. Thank you so much for having me. It's so fun to talk to you guys. I really had such a fantastic time. Ask me back anytime.
Cool. Oh, you say so?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Maybe give me some time to have some like new experiences so I'm not just like repeating the same stuff to you guys, but like truly, I had so much fun. And if we ever do a workshop, you'll be the first ones to know.
Awesome.
Thank you.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Thank you, Cammy. Really appreciate it.
Yeah. How would Cammy want to end the show? Just like this, right?
Oh, end the show however you want.
Oh no. We have an Apartment D secret handshake.
Ha, ha, ha. Thank you so much.
That's perfect. We're totally going to freeze frame it 100%.
Yeah.